feel free to talk at a normal
volume.
Okay.
Oh, great. Am I just holding this?
You're holding it.
Oh, fantastic.
If you hold it sort of... there you go. You can see.
Is this good?
Yeah, you can see.
I'm so used to... I feel like I talk very quietly, just in general. I'm so used to... What is it called? Popping?
Exactly.
Term, like when you're like, you peak.
Yeah.
Maybe it's also different when you're like recording a cartoon and all of a sudden you're screaming. Like I've learned to like tell the producers behind the screen or behind like the glass wall, like I'm going to do two different tests.
Yeah.
We're going to do for the screaming lines and then we're going to do for the normal speaking, because they will be different settings. Otherwise I will ruin your minds.
And just blast the eardrums out.
Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay. Yep. That seems to be, that's running well. So the show is a straightforward interview show. I've done a ton of research, but
yes, is this all? This is me.
This is you.
These two pages are me.
These two pages are you.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
That's great. From last time,
I feel so honored. Oh my god! Did you do tutu? I saw tutu.
He did tutu. Craig did tutu.
Wait, what?
Craig won the Peabody for interviewing Desmond Tutu.
Oh, so how was? Wait, did you see the show though? Am I not thinking of the right? The show that's around town. Am I not? No.
Which two?
There is a show that I'm seeing a million posters for that I think it's a kids show, but it's called Tutu.
Oh, no.
Is this totally different?
No, this is Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
Right, of course.
Who Craig Ferguson interviewed on the Late Late Show.
Right, of course.
Probably similar. I've not seen the kids show.
Sure, they're probably exactly the same.
It's mainly inspired by the teachings.
This is... will this be aired? You know what? That's fine.
It could be wrong. It'll be a nice introduction.
Yes.
And we'll ease into the music just about here.
Great, perfect.
Hello and welcome to Spieling the Beans with me, Dom Stevens, the storytelling podcast in which storytellers tell stories about telling stories. And welcome to Edinburgh. You join me in Scotland for our Season 5 residency at both the Fringe and the Book Festivals. Now, you may know my first guest from The OC, Weeds, Superstore, Veronica Mars, Star vs. the Forces of Evil, Robot Chicken, Jane the Virgin, or How I Met Your Father, but most likely you'll know her from a Critics' Choice award-winning performance as Sue Heck in ABC's hit sitcom The Middle. For 9 years and 215 episodes, she brought the ultimate awkward teenager with evergreen optimism into our homes. And a few days ago, we sat down during her sellout run here at The Fringe of her debut one-woman show, appropriately titled I Was on a Sitcom, in which she examines how to identify herself outside of such a long-running and formative role, dealing with a traumatic pregnancy, and crucially, where those two things intersect, such as the surrealism of being recognised from TV whilst undergoing a C-section. It's an excellent show that, if you can get the chance to see it, take it. We talk learning from her legendary on-screen parents, being directed by her on-screen brother, Jay Leno, brand new cards, and so much more that I feel like we should just get straight into it. So, please welcome my guest for this episode, Eden Scher. Eden, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Well, congrats, first of all, on such an incredible show here at The Fringe. It's a beautiful, moving, funny, and just been announced, sold out your entire month.
Yes, thank you. And yes, it has. It is surreal. It is crazy that I was reading all my ticket sales wrong at the beginning, and I was telling my friend, like, wow, it's bleak. It's bleak. And I realized I was reading the, like, because it's really difficult to, like, read the actual, like, breakdown. And I thought the tickets that were left were the ones that had sold. So I was like, okay, every night I've got about 2 tickets sold. God, like, okay, one night I have, like, 6. That's pretty good. And I realized those were the ones that were left. And that was, I can't believe that was, like, before day one. The whole first week had almost, so yes, my whole run is sold out. And I'm like, it's nuts, but thank you for the job. I'm proud of it.
Well, as you should be, you should be. I saw it a couple of nights ago, and it's a really lovely, lovely show that you should be very proud of.
Thank you.
And
I'm so sorry. Did you see the night with the film crew?
Yeah, I did.
That was a little. I'm glad that you still think it's good after seeing that, because that was very, like, that was rough around the edges with the. That was. I understand now when people talk about, like. when people say, like, that's Fringe. But it is so crazy how, what's the expression, like, fly by the seat of your pants?
Sure.
So that it's like, this is such an institution in, like, the theater world, like, this whole month.
Yeah.
And yet, it is just nuts. Every day is like, I don't know, like, someone fainted in the theater because it was too hot. This is like, I had to take off this mic pack because of that. They were all filming and like they were all in the aisles. There was just a random chair on the stage when I started. Yeah. But if it still came across with
it's
all of those,
good even with okay. everything that could have gone wrong.
Okay, good.
yeah, because I thought it was filming for like to have a recording, but it's filming for an entire separate entity. It was BBC Scotland or something like that.
Yes.
For the news or for.
I don't know. Yes. So it's the news. Like news something, a segment, but yeah, it wasn't, I don't think I never would have agreed to have that mic pack on me if it was for my own recording. I would have figured out a different way just because sure. like, I don't think they realized how physical I get on stage, or they like just thought like, oh no, it's just a pack. And I'm like, you don't understand the, like, I'm so glad, I'm relieved that it looks so effortless, that it looks like a mic pack wouldn't interfere, but it absolutely, like, my back, every inch, every, like, centimeter where my body is, like, matters. It is very specific, it's very planned out.
Yeah.
So I had to take it off halfway through.
Yeah, no, it's a very well choreographed, very well, it's a very physical show that you do.
Yes. I realized, I started, when we first started blocking it, it was much less... I just realized my directors, Sarah Rajai and Charlie McDermott, who like really, really shaped the show into what it is. Like really, I had a lot of content before mm-hmm. and they were like, let's make this a show instead of just like rambling for an hour and a half.
Chisel the marble away, reveal the sculpture. Underneath.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But it was like, there was so much, there was just like mild blocking. And then we realized like, you know, you realize your strengths. And I was like, I'm a very physical person.
Yeah.
Like I'm very broad. And I was like so nervous about being like too broad. And is it just going to be like, am I going to seem hammy? And then we realized in doing this, like, you know what? I kind of am a ham. Like that's just
embrace the ham.
Exactly.
Go towards the ham.
Exactly. Exactly. Be the pig you are always meant to be. But no, we really leaned into it. And then like the more comfortable I got just like truly like running around the stage or like doing real, it's not just blocking, like real choreography,
yeah.
the more comfortable. It was like, I thought it was going to be tense because it was so, and I realized the more planned out it got with my body movements, mm-hmm. it actually became, I became more relaxed.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, so the mic pack was never going to work.
Well, let's dive into the title of the show.
Yes.
I was on a sitcom, the titular sitcom, The Middle.
Yes.
For 9 years, 215 episodes.
Yes.
You were Sue Heck was you.
Yes.
What's something about the experience, the process of being on a big network sitcom that surprised you or would surprise someone to learn what it's like?
I don't know if this is surprising. I feel like it shouldn't have surprised me, and it maybe wouldn't surprise. It's not going to surprise someone else, but it just somehow did. It's a little like when they say, and this isn't meant to be a segue, but it is like how they say, like, oh, parenting isn't what you expect. Your parenting, having a newborn is tiring. And you're like, yeah, I'm prepared to be completely exhausted, and then you're just not.
Yeah.
It's sort of like people say, like, it's going to be a lot of work. It's a lot of work. Like 9 years when you're doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
For 15 hours a day, mm-hmm. 9 months of the year, it's exhausting. It's like mentally, I found that every day after work, I had literally a hard time like making normal conversation as Eden because I spent so much of the day like with my brain wired in a certain way to say words that I didn't think about.
Sure.
That once I like going home being like, I have to think about the words, I can't do it. Your brain just like kind of shuts off. And so readjusting to that, like every few months, every 9 months it would end. And then I have to be like, oh, I have to, it's almost like I have to freely think again. Your brain is like, it's so exhausted. It doesn't know how to think freely for so many months. That, I guess that's the way to describe it.
Totally. Yeah. To become your own person again, to not.
Yeah. It seems like
outsource.
Exactly. That's what it feels like. It feels like you're outsourcing your body and your brain for hours and hours and hours at a time, hours and months and years at a time. And I guess it, like, what really surprised me was, like, it was just, which is sort of in the show, but just how much of myself. It's so basic. It seems really simple, but like how much really fundamental parts of myself became like just became a fictional being.
Sure.
It's a really weird thing to try and explain to someone how like to like how do you become enmeshed with a physical or with a fictional thing? Like that doesn't quite make sense because there's nothing really like it. Like when you're an author and you maybe like become really attached to your characters and they become really real to you. Mm. That's like a concept that I feel like people are familiar with. But like when you are the thing, it's like you're authoring it in real life and also literally physically becoming it. And so it's a I didn't expect there to be such a battle or like such a complicated, like to have it be something that I needed to process. I didn't think I'd have to emotionally process that part of it.
Yeah, yeah. And you've spoken before about how there's a blurred line between where Sue ends and Eden begins and vice versa. And even the word, you speak about it in your show, that the way you say it really as a 17-year-old
yes.
became the catchphrase of how, or one of the main ones, of how Sue said it.
Yes. Yes. It's exactly, it's like before, again, like, there were so many things that were in the show before and until we chiseled it down to the marble, to the beautiful statue that it is. But there was this part, and we ultimately took it out because I was like, this feels mean. I don't want to be mean to anyone ever. Mm-hmm. But like, we were trying to figure out how to just like, without saying it, just like exemplify what it feels like to have sort of a part of you become this other thing. Mm. And we were like, okay, we're going to like, maybe we'll take someone from the audience and say and just like talk to them and just be like okay Dom, like hey you're Dom, okay, like nice to meet you, like what, just like have a conversation, like you be you, just be naturally you, and then like maybe you say something, as soon as you say something that is authentically funny, that's like or made me laugh or whatever, I would just, it would be like, that was perfect, oh my god, that was so great, and you genuinely feel like that was so great because it was genuinely great, and then be like, can you say that again? And then like, great. And everyone laughs and like, amazing. Can you say it again? Like say it, do it. Oh my God, do it again. And now do it while walking. And now do it while like rubbing your head. Mm-hmm. Now do it while facing away. And then be like, by the way, your name is Bobby now. Mm-hmm. Just your name is Bobby. Everyone in the audience knows your name is Bobby. And that's it. Your name is Bobby. Bobby, can you do the thing again? Can you do that thing? And it's like this weird thing of, it's nobody is trying to be mad, like everyone genuinely likes this thing that you're doing, but all of a sudden, and then it's like, wow, and you just like Bobby, this, it's like a Pavlovian thing, like Bobby, this thing, Bobby, this thing, Bobby, this thing, and then all of a sudden, and then the whole audience, they don't know you, but they know Bobby, and they know this one thing you do, and it's like, well, it's confusing, because like, oh yeah, and you even start to think like, that is so Bobby, because you just hear it over and over again, and you forget, like, wait, this started with a conversation we were having where I just said something that made you laugh once. How did this become this?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a, that's it. Yeah.
How do you not lose your mind in that process? How do you not sort of...
You do.
Okay.
That's the thing. That's the crazy part, is that you, like, I think it's easier, like, if you are, if you're... smart enough, I guess, or like you're in enough therapy,
sure,
to like know to try and just like resist the temptation to, or not temptation, to like the actual, to like not to act, you have to fight against having your identity, your real personal identity, be completely wrapped up in this other thing, because then it becomes, it's not just like this fictional thing, but it's, because it really is fiction and it's a job, it yeah. actually is a job I'm getting paid to do, it's my like work. So when that ends, then it is this thing of like, okay, I feel so free that I don't have to do the same thing over and over again, but also that's my identity. All of a sudden I'm not me. I don't have this job that like, it's all one. It's me, and like getting paid to sort of be yourself is weird.
Yeah.
And so it is, you sort of, you do go a little insane, and you just have to resist it. I don't know. You just have to talk it out with people. You have to just sort of embrace being in, like, embrace the, if you don't realize how crazy it is, that's when the true insanity sets in. So.
Well, you were fortunate to have quite a sort of sitcom supergroup with you on that.
Yes.
You had your father, Neil Flynn, off of Scrubs, janitor from Scrubs, Patricia Heaton, Everyone Loves Raymond, created the show from Roseanne and others. How did that affect the experience? And were there particular pieces of advice that Neil, that Patricia gave you that particularly stand out?
I think I feel really lucky that no one on the show, like specifically, like Neil and Patty, are just, I mean, just wonderful, wonderful people. Mm-hmm. But they both, I mean, they're from the Midwest in the States, which is like known for being very, you know, like humble,
welcoming.
Yes, welcoming, like friendly, not, you know, just, you know, good people, generally. But they also are people who I think got success later in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're very, like, they've both had normal people jobs. They both, like, know, they know that what they're doing is, like, so special,
mm-hmm.
and so unique. Like, it's so, nobody gets to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So they, I think they have, they sort of, and I sort of, I, luckily, again, I wasn't, like, I didn't grow up, I didn't start, like, when I was five.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, the only thing I've ever known. And, like, because another thing that's crazy about it, and again, this isn't, like, news to anyone, but it kind of is, because nobody says no to you on set.
Sure.
Nobody, when you're an actor, nobody says no. And what, especially when it's a sitcom, you're doing the same thing over and over again, and it's meant to be funny. Like, that's the point of it. And so everyone is specifically, not just like, oh, I'm so moved, specifically laughing.
Mm.
They're laughing at something you're doing and telling you, great, great, great. Oh, my God, great. I can't imagine starting as, like, a child,
mm-hmm.
and having that. Like, I feel lucky that I had a pretty healthy base of, you know, self-loathing and insecurity. So, like, I started from a place of knowing. And also, like, I was trying to be an actor when I was a kid, but, like, I think you need a little bit of rejection. Like, a lot of rejection to know that what you're doing is special. But so the thing that they really instilled, I think, is, like they were never divas on set. They were just like, I don't know if they ever verbally said this, but it was very clear through their actions, like, this is incredibly special.
Mm-hmm.
You should be very grateful. And obviously, and also, like, you can see it, like, it is hard work. It is physically taxing. It is, like, it's mentally taxing, and it's difficult, but there was never, I feel very grateful that they were always like, be funny, do your job, just do your job. This is a job, and you're so lucky to have it. Be funny, be yourself, but that's it. So they never confused their own, I think, identities with their careers, because they had such strong identities before. So I feel like I was able to at least see that. If they didn't say it, I could, like, see it and, like, grasp that as a model. And they're just so funny. I feel like I really learned how to, like on a technical level, to, like, be funny.
The comedic timing.
Yeah. Because it is, it's like, you can teach someone generally how to act. You can teach them techniques. But you really can't teach someone to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
You can hone it, but you cannot teach someone, you can't teach someone timing. I've tried to see it. It's either in you or it's not, for whatever reason, whether it's genetic or you learned it from a young age. I don't know what it is, but you can't. So, like, seeing, luckily, I think I do have whatever, that gene, like, I get it.
Yeah.
I feel like I totally understand it. And so, like, being able, like, having the ability to be receptive to their lessons on honing it, like, they're, again, not tangible. Like, here's the comedy lesson. But just, like, watching someone for 15 hours a day, the way they would, the way they'd memorize lines, the way they would attach the lines to blocking, the, like, spaces they would take, the way they would breathe, stupid things like that, that make such a difference. And, like, it's like learning to play an instrument. You're just, you have to learn like, you can play the trumpet, but if you're not breathing, if maybe you're, like, you have a really good ear, but, like, if you're not learning how to breathe properly and, like, literally stretching the muscles in your hand to, like, reach all the you know, the keys or whatever. Clearly, I've never played the trumpet. I'm like, ooh. It's like, it's kind of a piano. Then you're never going to be good at the trumpet. You'll just have a good ear. So, like, that was, like, it was the real, they were really teaching me how to, like, muscles in your hand, like, strengthen. This is how you, it's a sport. Like, you have to train, you know.
Yeah. And clearly you do have that deep down within you, because even before the middle, Jay Leno and a segment called Jaywalking played a seemingly pivotal role in your career. What exactly, in your words, happened, and you explain?
I have no idea how this, when I look back on it, I'm like, this is nuts. The odds of this happening were so, like, I feel like I've led this life of, like, I've worked very hard, mm-hmm. and I didn't, like, I'm not a Nepo baby, like, definitely didn't come from anything,
yeah.
but, like, I like, went on every audition, and I, like, really, really was dedicated in gold, but, oh my God, so much of it is luck. Oh my God, so much of this is fucking luck. Can I curse? Is that fine?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Jay Leno, yeah, I don't know. I grew up in LA, and Jay Leno, one of the segment producers, just, like, came to my school, my elementary school, when I was in, I think, third, fourth grade,
mm-hmm.
and it was, like, a segment that was, like, a kind of a kid say the darndest things type of thing,
mm-hmm.
where, like, they would, they just wanted to ask questions to kids about, they just wanted to talk to kids about, I think they came for Halloween, and they wanted to, so, like, they're like, we're just gonna talk to kids, we're gonna ask them questions, and it, see what funny things kids say,
mm-hmm.
and they asked all the teachers to, like, for, like, 20 minutes, send them out of class, like, send a few of your kids who you think will be comfortable on camera, because, mm-hmm. like, not every 8-year-old is going to be like, he's going to be like, yeah, let me just openly talk. Look at all the cameras. Hello, it's me. People usually shut down.
Sure.
And again, I'm a ham. So I was like, I'm ready. So they sent me. And then you're there for whatever, half an hour. It gets chopped up into a 90-second piece.
Yeah.
And some of my answers got aired, and everyone was like, ha, 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 ha. Amazing. Oh, what a smart...
what a card.
Wait, what a what?
What a card.
A card? It's
an old English phrase of, like, what a funny chap.
Oh, I'll take it. Oh, what a card. Yes, I was such a card. So they were like, yes, well, what a card. And then I
love that it's now part of your lexicon. You can bring that back to LA.
Absolutely. I'm slight tangent, just really quick. I will come back to this, I swear.
Feel free.
But just in, like, the lexicon, like, UK, like, things that I've learned.
Sure.
One of my tech guys kept calling me brand new. And I was like, what are you saying? What does this mean? He was like, no, I'm not going to try to do a Scottish accent. He's a very thick Scottish accent. He was like, you're brand new. Like, it means, like, I don't know, like, a breath of fresh air. Like, that's what we say. Your class. You're brand new. And I was like, oh, that totally makes sense. I totally understand that phrase of, like, oh, you're, like, I get the concept of.
Like books fresh.
Yeah, yeah. Or, like, something novel. Something,
yeah,
like,
exactly,
oh.
Yeah.
And so now that I'm obsessed with, I'm going to bring that back and be like, oh my God, that is brand new. Like, ooh, you are brand new.
A brand new card.
You are a brand new. I was a brand new card at 8 years old. But so yeah, so they were like, you're a brand new card. and then they came back for, I guess, Christmas time, and they did the same segment, and they were like, that girl, remember that girl from a couple months ago? One of the producers was like, that girl was good, get her on. And then, again, my, like, answers got aired, and then one of the producers, like, the odds of, one of the producers asked my teacher for my mom's information to ask my mom if I was an actor and if I would be interested in doing my own individual segment on The Tonight Show.
Wild.
And I had been begging my mom for years, since I was, like, two years. It seemed like a decade when I was a child, but, like, for years, she was like, I'm a good mother, so no, you may not have an agent.
So you wanted to be a child star.
I did. I would see these TV shows and I'd be like, I can do this better. I can do it better. Like, I'm better. I'm smarter. I'm, I don't know what happened to that confidence. It all went away in puberty. But no, I was an extremely confident child. But she was like, no, I will not get you an agent. You can do theater. Like, you'll do after school drama, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then this happened and I was like, told you so. And she was, luckily enough, she was supportive enough to be like, okay, like, I'll let you do this. Like, yeah, let's, sure. So I did it. I actually did the segment with my brother. And it was, we did a couple, we shot a few things. And then I was like, I get an agent now. And she was like, okay. And then I started acting. I didn't really, again, like get a lot of success. I started, like, I did a few commercials. I actually did another show for ABC, another sitcom that was all improv.
Okay.
It went like 10 episodes. Like, you blink and you miss it. Sure. It was called Sons and Daughters. And then I just did a few little TV things. And then when I was 17, yeah, I got the middle. But yeah, but so the fact that I like was able to even, because I got an agent off of that, and then the age, it was just this series of events that when I look back, I'm like, how did those things happen in that order to me?
Yeah.
What did I do to make that? I didn't. That's luck. Yeah, that's what happened.
And the rest is history.
Fantastic.
I'm conscious of the time, so I'm gonna I'm gonna do three more questions.
Oh, and my then God, we'll get wait, what time here. Is it? Is it already almost four? I can stay in another 10, 12 minutes. Is that okay?
That would be great. Yes. Okay. Whatever suits.
I'm having such a good time.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Well, I'm so glad. We could happily do it in a couple of hours, but I might hold you hostage now. You mentioned in passing during that, but I'll rephrase it as you mentioned in the show at a very pivotal moment, you find a script that's really important to you because it's the episode in which Axel and Sue have a fight, and it's because of that fight episode that you realized how strongly you value your friendship with Charlie McDermott, who played Axel on the show.
Yeah.
And Charlie not only directed or co-directed I Was in a Sitcom, but also directed an episode of the middle, season 8's The Confirmation.
Yes.
I can confirm.
Yeah. yes, you have two pages of research.
what was the experience like being directed by Charlie, and how did it differ being directed as part of a network sitcom episode and a live show?
I can't believe how drastically different they are.
Mm-hmm.
They are the same in that he... And now, it was just him before, but he and his wife, Sarah, are so talented that was the same in both times that I realized, like, it's like the best directors can be actors. They're sometimes not. But if you really can, if you have that directing gene, if you are like, if you can understand, if you know how to communicate things in that way, if you are also an actor, you really then know how to talk to actors, and you know the way to, you know what makes, you know what they need to know. You know the information that they actually need to know in order to do their job well. And it just, I like in that moment I was, and again, I guess I was at, it was maybe an unfair advantage because we were already so close, but like, it was just like being, I don't know, it's just like playing around. It was like being a kid. It was just like playing pretend with your friend, and your friend was just like, do this. And then I was like, oh, what if I do that? And then your friend's like, oh, that's great. And then do this. And then say it like that. And so I realized then, like, oh, he's so good.
Yeah.
He just knows, there's just something intangible. There's like, he knows how to communicate and make things good and better.
Mm-hmm.
And he directed, and I've read the things that he's written with his wife, and they're just like, they're just good. He just like gets it, and we have like a connection. We just have a brain connection. And so, yeah, in doing this, I was like, there's no person who will be more like acutely, like viscerally familiar with the material.
Sure, yeah.
And it totally was the right decision. Both things were good. Like we were able to communicate, but one of them, like during the middle, it really is like that is set. Like you're not inventing anything.
Yeah,
you're just either good at it or like directing. You're good at like having fun and directing, making the episode good, or you're not. And with this, it was like a truly starting from scratch, like creative, collaborative process where it wasn't just say the line like this. It was like, again, like let's rewrite the intro.
Sure.
And it was like I wrote it. I did write the whole thing, but they, every day we would go in, we would like work it out, and they'd be like, give me homework. They were like, make it like this, 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 like, and they'd give me like almost prompts or be like, this is like, this is good, this is garbage. No one needs to know about that. It's boring. And I know, it's like, this is boring, right? They're like, it's boring. Focus on that. I'm curious about that. Like, everyone wants to know about that. And then they like would place it in different areas of the show. They changed the ending. They were like, end it here. And I was like, this is so much better. Like, I just never, and they would just have these ideas of like, what if they just, so it was just good. The communication was really good. Their blocking was just like, they had these creative, because I think they also had never done live theater. They never directed live theater. I had never done live theater, like in this capacity.
Yeah.
And so they brought to it was very film oriented. And so it almost felt like some of the things were, they would look at it through the lens of like, literally through a lens. Like they'd be like, here's how I would shoot it. If this were a pilot, like this is what I would shoot. So how do we communicate this thought through being on stage? And so that's why a lot of it, I ended up like when we wanted to give certain effects, like, you know, sometimes I like talk straight at the audience when it doesn't quite make sense. Sometimes I'm like, you know, I play different characters or whatever.
So you force it into a close up or you force it into a.
Exactly. It's like, oh, if he would have, like, they were like, we would shoot this as like a POV shot. It'd be really like effective to be like here right in your face.
Yeah.
And so, like, how do we get that effect on stage? And it was just very, it was just good. It was just good. They were both good. That's what they had in common.
Well, fantastic. Yeah. I know in French films, director is listed as realizer. And I think Greta Gerwig said something very similar to that. And she prefers that term because it's about realizing a vision. It's not about sort of being a soldier marching into battle. It's about what is the thing you want to create and how do we bring that to a real form.
That is so good. That is much more accurate, I think, to what they did. What a great term. I didn't know that.
They realized it for you. It already kind of existed, but they brought it into reality.
Exactly. It never would have been. This would have been a diary entry without them. Truly, they would never have been.
An award-winning blog post.
barely. It would be, maybe it would be like if anyone had the time to sift through the gibberish, they'd be like, oh, that's pretty good. But like nobody would have the time. I wouldn't have the time. I hated going through my brain vomit document because I was like, this is so boring. There's so much in here.
Well, you made it fantastic.
All right, good. Thank you.
And on a similar note, you've noted before in Vulture in 2017, just as the middle of wrapping up, you said, and it really stuck out to me, I love television. I feel there's a hierarchy of the prestige. Sorry, I feel there's a hierarchy of prestige of different mediums in Hollywood. And I know sitcoms aren't high up on that totem pole, but I love them. Why aren't sitcoms higher up that totem pole?
I think because it's, I don't know. Comedy is, in general, is just not quite as respected as dramas. And I get it, having done more emotional, like, it is, I don't want to say it's harder. I don't know. There's something, honestly, I don't know. I think it's a really, really powerful thing to be able to make someone laugh. Yeah. And, like, I know that's not a novel concept. That's not a brand new idea. That's not a brand new card of an idea. I'm not using that right. I can tell.
That's 75% there.
But there, I think there's something to be able to make someone laugh doing effectively the same thing for 9 years.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's something to that. I think there's like if the skill of like being able to build a relationship, to being able to like, being able to like giving someone, it's not always like, oh, you're making me cry, but letting someone, like, there is something to, it's a form of letting someone in. Like, when you make someone, you're able to make someone feel just, like, really cotton candy joy.
Yeah.
Nothing too deep. You just feel good.
Yeah.
I think that's, I don't know, this is not quite as respected because it's not maybe as deep of a feeling as, like, oh, it's not, like, profound, the, like, I sort of, maybe I'm thinking about it in the moment and I'm like, a sitcom is like eating a really, really good chocolate chip cookie.
Sure.
Everyone's had a chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah.
You know it. It's not anything crazy. But like when you eat a really good one, it's really good. And it's not, and then like movies are like, you know, what is it, like gastro and like
fine dining.
Fine dining and like, oh, and it's new and it's like, do, 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 do. And so there's something like, whoa, really cool about that. But like, there's something like, I'm sorry, it's still pretty amazing. Yeah. It's just as good. It's just not quite as like, bah, mind blowing. So maybe that's why, I don't know. People don't respect comedy. I don't know why.
Perfectly encapsulated there. Yeah. That it's, and it's so transformative to people. When people, it's the phrase comfort watch is because they need comfort.
Yes.
Something going on with their life, whatever it may be, they turn to shows like The Middle to redress that balance, and in the way they would for medicine. And, why that can't be seen as prestige like other shows, I'm equally at a loss.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
My final question is one that I ask every guest on the show, but it's the first time, if I may, to ask to two of yourselves. So first as Eden, and latterly as Sue, if I may.
The question you ask everyone on your show if they were Eden or if they were Sue?
It's the first time it's been relevant. But the question is, why do we need stories?
Oh, man. That is a great question. I feel like we need stories for the same reason we need dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think stories, again, I don't know if this is going to be a new answer. Maybe people are going to be like, yeah, duh. But stories help us work out our own story.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't know our own, if we're not familiar, if we don't know what our own path is, and I don't think you need to necessarily know or have it planned out what your own like life path is, or even be like perfectly clear on your own identity. You don't need to label your identity, but I think stories help us to clarify what our it like puts a label on something. It's sort of like if you are sick and it's just this ambiguous, like, oh my God, my stomach hurts and I don't know what it is. It's like, it can be really scary.
Yeah.
And then you go to the doctor and you're like, oh, they're like, oh, that's gastroenteritis, blah, 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 I don't know. And they're like, everyone has that. Or like, so many people have that. Here's the cure. Or not even here's the cure, but like, oh, they're just even knowing there is no cure, but here's what it's doing. And then you know it. It makes it so much more manageable.
Yeah.
And so I feel like stories are that, not the medicine, but the diagnosis.
Sure.
Stories are the diagnosis for our lives and our identity and our path. And I think having being able to relate to another human on a way that's not just, yeah, it's just, it creates a, like a fundamental seenness that's not just like, oh, we have something in common, but like, it makes you feel like you know yourself a little bit better. Does that make sense?
Totally. Okay. Totally. Was that Eden? Was that Sue?
That was Eden. I feel like Sue would maybe... Sue's smart. You know, you've got to play every character at the top of your intelligence. Mm-hmm. That's like... That is something I've learned.
Top of their intelligence? Top of your intelligence?
Top of your intelligence.
Top of your intelligence.
Yeah.
Because okay.
I've also played it... I feel like I don't know why. I've gotten cast in the past as like these sort of simple character, like dopey, you know, or whatever. And I've never thought of Sue as being stupid.
Nice.
But there is like a... I feel like maybe because I'm so smart, I'm a genius, I like, maybe can, I bring a little bit more, you know, I don't know, intel, I don't know. But I do feel like Sue would not say that. Sue would maybe say something a little simpler. I don't want to say like, because they make us feel good, but it's something in that vein. Be like, because we need stories to lift our spirits. We need stories to lift our spirits and help us keep going and make us feel... Yeah, make us feel like we're not alone in the world, which is true. A little more basic. I don't know.
But it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And beautifully put.
Okay.
Eden, Sue, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Dom. This was wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.